Welcome to the Love Letters to Poe podcast. I'm Sarah Crokel Smith, publisher and editor-in-chief, bringing you wonder and terror, romance and horror in this gothic fiction magazine. Each week, I'll be sharing a new gothic story or poem from the pages of Love Letters to Poe. You can find the original stories and poems, author interviews, your free copy of the magazine's inaugural issue, and much more at loveletterstopoe.com. Today's gothic story is titled In the Alder Glade, read by the author, Natasha C. Calder. This story can be found in Volume 1, Issue 2 of Love Letters to Poe. I hope you enjoy this haunting tale.
Sorka stands alone and raises hand to brow, her dark curls disking down over her fingers as she squints into the falling sun. Her heart becomes so light she fears it will not withstand even the weight of her own blood for much longer. It's always like this when her sister wanders off. The lightness, the dread. In her left hand she holds a pellet. It is one of several such that she found clustered in the dust beneath Anne's empty bed. Its compacted ash slivered through and through with sucked dry beetle shells and who can say what else. She'd known at once what it had meant, of course. Known at once there must have been the usual signs as well. The words unsaid, the eyes not met, the bread uneaten. It meant, it means, that she has not been watching closely enough. But then Anne had seemed much better lately. The pellet gives way beneath the pressure of Sorka's touch, crumbling in her hand and scattering to the ground. She drops her eyes to where the ashes fall and thinks of Anne's feet planted where she now stands, the roots of foxglove and delphinium at her heel, the earth scratched and dry at her toe. The track stretches out beyond and into the forest. Anne's there, she's sure, in amongst the alders looming dark. Above the trees, a shock of sparrows sudden clouds the sky, as if startled by some unknown beast. Sorka frowns and touches the charm knife belted to her waist. She tries to picture Anne returning with the dawn, unharmed, her words all new I shouldn't truths, her smiles all won't again lies. But the image slips and fades, however Sorka tries to keep it fixed. Wishes. Prays. Heavy-hearted, she steps onto the track and starts to trace her sister's steps into the wood. There is no need to wonder if she's chosen right. This is the way, she's sure. Though she does not recall the branches being broken back like this, nor the bracken trampled down. She thumbs the handle of the knife and hurries on, pausing only at the sight of a familiar, clumpen mass that lies beside the path. Squinting, she can just make out the shards of bone and matted feathers within the clot of regurgitated ash. When the light fails, Sorka slows her step, picking over root and stone. She's drawing close, or so her memory says, as much as she might wish there were 100 yards to go instead of 10. 8 yards. 6 yards. 4. Glade's edge. She stops. Draws the knife. A pale figure crouches up ahead. Oh, she breathes. Angel eyes. Even in the gloom, she cannot ignore the mangled sparrow, half alive between the creature's teeth, nor how the bird, feathers all at horrid angles, makes no bid to fly. Anne! The name tears from Sorka's lips and rings throughout the wood, loud enough to wake the marrow spiders. Yet the creature does not move, does not look up. But neither does it flinch when Sorka's fingers light upon its shoulder. Anne. Her heart, her answer and her ask. She kneels beside her sister, picks a bloodied feather from her hair, and gently prizes the mangled fledgling from her grip. Sorka slides her blade across the bird's throat and sets its dead and broken body down among the fallen leaves, just beyond Anne's reach. She wants to shout, "How? Again? This bad again? So quick?" But, knowing better, lets her questions go unmouthed. So she's surprised to see Anne tilt her head as if she's heard, as if considering a response. And then she notes Anne's pale eyes are fixed so wide they are almost lidless, tracking something that moves amongst the trees but that Sorka cannot see or guard against, will or no, knife or no. She watches helpless as Anne flinches back, rips apart her lips, and screams. Sorka reaches out to pull Anne from her waking terror. Angel Eyes, it's me. It's safe. It's only me and no one else. It's just the dark. I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. She does not think that Anne can hear her rough incantation, but the words are, perhaps, enough to scare away the creeping formless shades, and soon the scream dies to silence. Then Anne just sits, staring. A husk. Enough. Sorka sheathes her knife and wraps her arms unfelt around her sister's frame. Lifts. Falters. Straightens. Grips tight. Stumbles on with fierce, unsteady steps, not stopping to breathe or dream of end, but only step and step and step till gasping, panting, she gains the open air beyond the trees. And all the while her sister hangs limp between her arms, unspeaking and unseeing. The sun has nearly set. Sorka staggers through the garden and on into the house. She sets Anne down and does her best to clean away the forest, scrubs the dirt from off her sister's face and arms, takes the knife and traces each nail of each finger on each hand, lifting the caked dirt with the blade's edge. Anne whimpers a little, but does not resist. And then Sorka guides her into bed, takes the chair beside and sets to watch. Anne looks from corner to corner, her eyes never lighting on Sorka for more than a moment, restless, unable to settle. This, too, Sorka recalls more clearly than she cares for. She gently takes her sister's hand and brushes her fingers with kisses. Thinks, please don't, please don't, please don't. Whispers, I've got you, Angel Eyes. And slowly stills. Her breath steadies and deepens. Her pale eyes flutter closed. She murmurs something that could be Sorka, or could be sorry, and might be both. Then, releasing Sorka's hand, she turns onto her side and gives herself to sleep. Sorka pulls her chair closer still and watches as the last of the light fades. The knife lies across her lap, a guard against the shadows. She struggles to stave off sleep herself. Fails, dreams that she is flying. Wakes sometime later to see moonlight falling across the bed. The covers are smoothed out flat, and lying at the centre of the sheet is a single clotted mass of ash and bone. Her heart understands before she does, battering violently against the inside of her ribs. Not daring to believe the warning of her blood, Sorka slowly turns her head to inspect the room. On the windowsill perches a monstrous, pale-eyed owl. Anne. Sorka's eyes fall from the lamp-like eyes to the curled talons. The owl has the knife grasped in its left foot. A low moan escapes Sorka's lips. She starts and tries to stand, but her legs will not obey. She falls back limp in the chair, tears streaming silently down her face. The owl, indifferent to her plight, merely sits and watches. There is not long to wait. They both know the charmed blade cannot protect her now, cannot keep her bound from such a distance. Sorka closes her eyes, unable to bear the sight of her body as it diminishes into its true form, the bones fluted and air light, the feathers dusty brown. At last, the owl lets the knife drop, forgotten, to the floor. Spreading its wings, it launches itself from the sill, dreadful talons outstretched to catch the fluttering sparrow.
If you enjoyed this work of fiction, please show your love by leaving a review. Never miss another story or poem by visiting loveletterstopoe.com/join. And if you want the party to continue, I invite you to Prince Prospero's Masquerade over at patreon.com/loveletterstopoe. Until next time, embrace what lurks in the shadows. You never know what gothic adventure lay within.